Welcome to episode 532 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite movies, music, shows, and games. And Josh, we have another week without any feedback.
Yeah, but you say that like we didn't have any feedback last week, and we had a lot of good feedback.
We did.
So maybe it's just like a sine wave of feedback.
It is. It fluctuates. It ebbs and flows. But we hope that people are inspired to send us feedback. Let us know what they've been up to during these crazy times, what they're watching and all of that. And who knows, even let us know what they want to hear more of or less of on Entertainment 2.0 at Entertainment 2.0. Sorry, Entertainment 2.0 at thedigitalmediazone.com.
It's okay, Richard. We know that you're new to this email thing.
I know. It's so different for me. It's
newfangled technology.
It's like letters, but through my computer.
Anyway, so like usual, we're going to start with video news, but these are going to be, I think, some fairly quick hits. So first up in our video news tonight, Movies Anywhere now makes their movie sharing functionality available to almost everybody. It's basically available to all of their US users. This is their Screen Pass technology. We've talked about it a little bit in the past where, because it's been in beta, I think they first announced this back in March, and It's a pretty cool thing. So Movies Anywhere, of course, is one of the, it's kind of the place to go if you're in the United States, at least, for getting access to all of your digital movie purchases. So it combines access to your Disney stuff, your Google Play, your Amazon, your Apple, like Fandango, all of those different digital movie lockers. You can get all of them through Movies Anywhere.
As long as it's the right studios.
Oh, right. Yeah, it's not all studios. That's correct. Which ones aren't there? Is it
Paramount and Lionsgate are still holding out. Still.
Yeah. Anyway, so all of those movies, now you can share most of them with a friend. So the way this works is you pick a movie, you send out a code to your friend, and you can do that through email, text, whatever. It's just, here's a code and send it to your friends. They then get like up to 2 weeks to initiate watching it. And then once they've started watching it, they get 72 hours to watch the movie. There's some other limitations on it. You can only lend 3 movies per month. So you can't just be lending out movies left and right to everyone you know. But like, let's say you've got some brand new movie, you can lend the same movie over and over again as often as you want. So that's cool.
Oh, and wait. So it's only what that really means is 3 titles per month.
Right.
That's how
I'm interpreting this.
Interesting. So I never came to that conclusion. That that is actually way cooler, I think. Because I assumed it was basically 3 loans.
That was my original thought too, but according to the article that we're going to link to over at this tiny little tech blog that you may or may not have heard of called Engadget, that's how it works. So I don't know, maybe you should pick some fancy new movie and try sharing it with like 6 people, see if it works.
Now, I did make you a friend through this service. Have you tried it yet?
We're finally friends.
I know. It's kind of like, it's kind of like that that family member that refuses to friend you on Facebook. But that would be me, since I'm not on Facebook. No, but did you ever get a chance to try it out?
I looked through your library, but I did not actually get around to watching anything yet.
I think that's his nice way of saying that there was really nothing there that I was interested in, Richard.
You've got an awesome collection of movies, including all of those X-Men movies that we've been talking about for the last few weeks.
And for what it's worth, all of the Fast and Furious movies.
Oh.
But of course you have them.
Well, I don't think I actually own all of them.
Hmm.
And I definitely don't have all of them in like 4K. I'm betting you don't have them in 4K, but maybe you do.
Well, I had them as Blu-ray and I redeemed them through Apple TV. So I very well might have them in 4K now.
Oh, right. Because they did that awesome like trade up sort of program. Yeah. That was cool.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So they might be in there. They might be in there for me to check out because 80% of their total overall library, about 6,500 titles, is available for sharing. So 80% is a really good percent, but it does mean that there are some movies out there that you cannot lend to other people. But with 80%, seems like most of the things that you're going to want to watch are going to be available.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
So there's only other one little weird restriction here. In order to lend out a movie, you have to have redeemed a digital code, and it can't be one of those promotional codes. It's got to just be like, you went, you bought a disc, you're redeeming the code within the last 6 months. And for you, that's probably not an issue, but I don't buy very many titles.
That's an interesting little wrinkle, and particularly in these times when we haven't had a whole lot of brand new movies.
Ooh, that's a good point.
Like I've been buying close to no movies recently. I know I purchased one sometime this spring. I couldn't tell you what. So, I might have to look into that.
Yeah, there haven't really been a lot of big disc releases in the last couple of months, right?
Yeah. For the most part. But Edward, I had to buy this new movie because otherwise Josh can't borrow films from us.
Right. Because Josh watches so many movies. I mean, we take a half hour at the end of every podcast talking about all of the movies Josh is watching.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So anyway, Movies Anywhere, their screen sharing or movie sharing functionality now available to everybody in the US. Give it a try. Let us know how it works out for you. Going to move on to a news story from Richard's favorite studio, maybe just favorite company on the planet, Disney.
Yeah, and a movie I just am so excited about.
Yes. Yeah. So rumors here that Disney, as they're launching the new live-action Mulan movie this Friday, September 4th, rumored to also be launching a group watch functionality type feature with it. Now, if this is true, they've kind of got to get on it, right? Like, maybe you don't want to roll this functionality out the same day? That seems like a bad idea, right? But it's in 3 days.
Well, maybe they've already piloted it with a significant group of people already. I mean, I haven't heard anything on that, but who knows? Who knows? But this is smart. This makes a lot of sense. I assume, though, that all parties have to have access to the film to be able to participate in this. Is that true?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And obviously, Mulan is a little bit of a weird one because it's their first one that is a movie that's not part of the basic Disney Plus subscription.
Right.
You've got to give them an extra $30 to watch it.
Right.
Yeah, so they're doing other sorts of content restrictions. Like if you want to watch something that is only available for, like only available in the United States, and you've got friends in Europe, they can't watch it with you. And that totally makes sense. So you're not going to get around region blocking and stuff like that with this functionality. What you are going to be able to do is enjoy basically anything else that's on Disney Plus with up to 7 people. It's when we talk about these watch together features, it's probably important to remember that this isn't the thing that Richard is super afraid of. It's not people talking. It's just text chat. So there's text chat, there are emojis, and then everybody has the ability to pause the movie at any point, which, as long as you're not watching with a bunch of jerks, is probably going to be good so that everybody can take their bathroom breaks when they need to, but hopefully you'll all be kind and take them at the same time. Or, I don't know, can't you just hold it for 2 hours? I don't know, maybe not.
Well, with kids, you don't really necessarily have that sort of discipline, but I guess
that's true.
What I would be curious about, so, you know, I haven't really looked at this much because while it's not the thing that I would absolutely hate, it isn't also something that I would actively pursue. So what I don't know, just really because of a lack of knowledge on my part, is this a second screen experience, or is this something that happens on the main screen? In other words, are you using like your tablet to watch and text, or can you watch it on your TV and be texting on your tablet? How's it work?
I think most of these services, it's all on one screen. So you're seeing the text chat overlaid on top of the movie. And the rumors here state that this might only be on PC and mobile, and that makes me think that that's going to be the case here too.
Okay, yeah, because, you know, typing on a TV device is usually a pretty miserable experience.
Yeah, exactly. Now, on my Xbox, it'd be fine because I have the little thumb keyboard pad that plugs into my controller, because I'm that kind of nerd on my Xbox. But yeah, any other device, it would be brutal to type out all those messages.
Yeah, I mean, theoretically, they could use the soft keyboard that a lot of streaming boxes have through their respective apps, but still, that's kind of a pain.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
this is becoming a more and more limited audience that this appeals to, I think, right?
right. So you're planning to watch Mulan this weekend, right?
No, didn't we have this conversation?
I forgot what you.
Yeah,
what your
I am
was.
Not buying this twice. I'm not doing it.
Oh, right, because you're going to pick it up physically.
Yeah, I'll buy it on disc. Edward and I already had this conversation. We're in no huge hurry that we have to watch it now. Definitely want to see it, but I'm just not willing to pay for it twice.
Oh yeah, that makes sense. Okay, well then, I guess you're not going to be interested in doing a group watch with me.
Yeah, probably not so much.
Okay. Well, you mentioned earlier that, you know, kids might need frequent bathroom breaks and they might need to pause the movie a lot. According to this rumor, there will be some limitations on what kids can do, and that's a good idea. So kids cannot initiate one of these group watching sessions, and you can also pin protect the group watch party, so that if you are picking a movie that maybe you don't want kids watching, then they won't be able to just easily jump into the stream with all of you. But it's Disney Plus. Like, how much stuff is on there that you don't want your kids watching? I know there's some.
Yeah, I mean, there are some R-rated films there.
Are there?
I could have sworn that there were a couple from the Fox Studio acquisition.
Yeah. Maybe.
I could be wrong.
All right. So that does it for our Disney Plus rumor. On to some, two companies that have been kind of frustrating over the last few months, TiVo and HBO. A lot of confusion between, what HBO has been doing with all of their streaming services lately, and kind of a lot of confusion around TiVo's offerings. So do you want to try and clarify what's happening with TiVo and HBO?
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to, because this is going to devolve into a rant of sorts. So, as most of us are well aware, HBO Go and HBO Now have gone away. These products really just don't exist anymore. And in their wake, we have HBO Max, which some people who had access to HBO Go before would get, and some people who had access to HBO Now before also get, as part of their new transitioned experience. For those devices that did not move to HBO Max, HBO had an app called, because you need yet another one, simply HBO. And the HBO app was available on some devices like the TiVo. I believe it's also, well, it was also on the Amazon Fire and on the Roku streaming devices. Well, HBO has left TiVo's DVR devices. HBO, as a product, as a service, an app, no longer available on TiVo DVRs. So that means if you're a TiVo DVR user, you now have exactly zero ways of watching streaming HBO content. There's no way to do it anymore. Now, when HBO announced that they were coming out with this new shell game of apps, I and a number of other bloggers reached out to TiVo online through Twitter and asked the question, how are you going to be making HBO content available on your TiVo DVRs? And every time someone asked that question, they shuttled us to a direct messaging conversation.
Ugh.
And refused to answer the question in public. Clearly, this is why. Because they knew the answer was, oh, we're just getting rid of it. Now, when you ask TiVo, okay, well, how do we get HBO or HBO Max? They tell you, oh, well, HBO Max is now available on the TiVo Stream 4K. So TiVo Stream 4K customers can get it. So that's great for them, but not so much for TiVo DVR users. Now, there's a good reason for this. The good reason is that TiVo's development platform is years out of date. Nobody wants to be developing for this platform anymore. The Hulu app on TiVo, I am pretty sure that it has not changed. It's still the old Hulu app. Like, old, old. I don't mean the one before the latest redesign that gave us tiles again. I mean the one before the horrible full screen thing that they did. So the developers just don't, you know, the content providers, the services, don't want to have to create these one-off apps for these platforms that aren't compatible with anything else. And that has to be what's happening here. They really just can't interest Time Warner in doing this. There's not enough demand for it. But it makes you start to wonder, okay, so, you know, we didn't hear about anything having to do with TiVo DVRs at CES. They refused to answer questions about the TiVo streaming app that they were supposed to make available on streaming devices as a remote to TiVo boxes. And now we're being told that services are going away. What does that mean for TiVo DVRs? Is TiVo just giving up in the DVR category?
I don't think that the two things together point that out or point to that. I mean, because like while you say, you know, they didn't announce anything at CES and all that, and they're clearly looking at the TiVo Stream 4K and basing that on Android TV and all that stuff as a really sensible product for, you know, modern TV consumers. But I think what you were saying first about the HBO app, where the TiVo's development platform is just ancient and it's a complete one-off. It's right. Like Windows Phone was in the phone space, except
which
ancient.
Time?
Right. Yeah. So I think HBO leaving has a lot more to do with HBO going, yeah, we're not going to keep, spending developer time on making our stuff work for this decrepit platform that has pretty low usage. Whereas, you know, for TiVo, like I don't think them losing an app or having old software necessarily points to we're not doing DVRs anymore.
There's also some licensing going on here because this is only true for direct to consumer DVRs. Mm-hmm. If you purchased a cable or if you rented a cable company TiVo as your box from your cable company, the HBO app is not going away from that. What? Like, just, I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around that one.
Yeah, that one is weird, and it has to just 100% be licensing stuff that all of those TV providers said, you know, we sell HBO to our customers. You have to have an HBO app on this experience, period. It just has to be there.
So I would argue that this is, even if it's not a sign that TiVo is kind of waning on their support for TiVo DVRs, that it's a crappy way of treating their longtime customers. I mean, I've been a TiVo user for literally 2 decades. That's ridiculous. And I continue to stand by these products. And now I'm wondering, well, why am I standing by them if it doesn't seem like they're standing by them?
And they just released new hardware last fall.
That they've since done nothing with, really. I mean, yeah, they have new hardware, but that's it. Like, there's no major updates to it. It was the box that it comes in says that it's compatible with the streaming app that they never made. So, yeah, I'm starting to become disenfranchised. By the way, if anybody wonders if we're fair and objective about clients or, sorry, vendors that give us product to review, this should be a clear example that, yes, we're fair and honest.
Right. Yeah. So do you, like, what's your prediction here? Do you think that they're just going to get out of the DVR space entirely? Do you think that they are maybe working on something brand new that maybe is based on Android TV so that they can have a giant collection of apps available that they don't have to worry about other streaming video partners abandoning?
Yeah, it's a rough position to be in for them. I have to admit that, right? Because their meat and potatoes has been a product category that is clearly going down in numbers. Fewer and fewer people have DVRs, and that's largely because fewer and fewer people have cable. DVR service as a cloud service just hasn't been anywhere near as popular because, for the most part, people can get what they want when they want it, and the DVR experiences are largely hobbled by licensing agreements.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're in a position where their product is less and less relevant, and yet it's becoming more and more expensive to maintain and harder to keep vendors and partners on board, I mean, what are they to do? I don't know that they're in a good position short of just making a financial commitment to support their oldest customer base. And frankly, as a business decision, I don't know that that's a good one. I think that the presence that they had at CES showed that they are testing the waters to see if they can move to pivot the company from this physical hardware device manufacturer to more of a services provider that offers this, you know, magical experience glue that ties it all together. The frustrating part of that is that the stream experience isn't yet as good as the TiVo onboard experience on a DVR.
Right.
So they're not there yet on the service. They're certainly not there yet on the hardware. And the partners that they are offering as an alternative to physical DVR services, specifically the streaming DVR service from Sling.
From Sling, yeah.
Are just not up to par with what they've been able to offer in the past. So this is a company in a tight position, and I will be, I think the right word is anxious to see what their next steps are, but it's hard for me to predict them.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely hope that they find a way to greatly improve on what they've been doing with the stream 4K, that they somehow find a way to, I mean, frankly, I'm a big fan of the TiVo OTA DVR, and to have a stream 4K that has the OTA DVR built in would be pretty awesome. Mm. As long as they can figure out the rest of that, that software experience. You know, like you said, Sling isn't great, but having something like Sling in addition to OTA would also be really nice. But again, maybe not necessarily Sling. Having multiple providers would be great. Add YouTube TV in there, Hulu with live TV, Philo if you want to get with the really low cost alternative for people who don't care about news or sports. Yeah. But that is that's a really hard experience to manufacture when they can only really do a great experience when they fully partner with companies.
Well, I have an idea. You think that we could get our friends over at Silicon Dust, who make really good tuner devices, but not such good experiences for viewing it all, together to work with, well, these days, the people we barely know anymore at TiVo, and maybe they could do some magic? That would be interesting.
Yeah, but it's not like TiVo's hurting for hardware or tuner devices and stuff like that.
Yeah, but it seems pretty obvious to me that TiVo wants out of that business. I mean, they already have Aris making their boxes for them.
Mm.
So, and that in itself is fascinating because Aris is the company that bought Digio, which is the company that made the only other TiVo competitor in the last 10 years.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see. I mean, I hate ending stories with we'll see, but we're now, you know, we're into the third quarter now. We're fully into the third quarter. So things like CES are not really that far away. Even if CES is a fully digital event and all that stuff, you know, that is the time that the TiVo likes to announce things, and they will have had like 7 months under their belt with the TiVo Stream 4K, which I do hope has just been their way of releasing a device out there to see if they can make these next steps. So yeah. I'm really hoping that maybe they will have the next answer to what that all looks like.
Yep.
Come CES time. All right. A cool audio story here, I think. Kind of a mix, actually, of audio and video. The Amazon Music app, this is an app that I don't really use because I frequently talk about how I'm a Spotify user. But if you subscribe to one of like Amazon's 14 different music streaming services, maybe you do use the Amazon Music. Don't they have a bunch? Aren't there like three or four different tiers of Amazon Music streaming services?
Well, yeah, sure there are. But you talk about that as if it's not the exact same situation on Spotify. And it is. They have four or five different options when you sign up for Spotify. So
there's the free plan and the premium plan.
And the family plan and the duo plan. And like there's
but the family and the duo is just about numbers of accounts. It's not a different library.
Well, okay. All right. Yeah, that's true. It doesn't change your corpus of content. That's true. Okay.
Exactly. So regardless of all of that insanity with the Amazon Music offerings, Amazon is also the company that owns Twitch, the number one. Like, I mean, it's primarily for game streaming. That's where most of the content is coming from, people streaming themselves, playing video games and stuff. But once this pandemic hit, musicians flocked to Twitch to start performing live shows across the internet. And it gained a lot of popularity. Amazon, I'm kind of amazed it took them this long, but finally saw, oh, we should make these two things talk together. And that's what they're doing now. So the Amazon Music app, you would go in there, you'd follow the musicians that you love, the artists you love. And those musicians can now link their Amazon Music profile to their personal Twitch profile. And then whenever they go live, if you are following those artists inside of the Amazon Music app, you'll get a notification from the app that says, so-and-so, you know, whatever, you know, Taylor Swift or whatever, is streaming live on Twitch. And you can just start watching it. Now, some of you might be thinking, yeah, but I don't get Twitch. Like, I don't have the Twitch app installed. I don't understand how any of that works. And I don't want to install a bunch of other stuff. And Twitch probably requires me to create more accounts that I don't want to deal with. Like, blah, I don't want to do any of that. Well, fortunately, Amazon thought of that. You don't even have to leave the Amazon Music app. It's not going to boot you out to the store to go download the Twitch app. You're just going to get that live video experience right there inside of the Amazon Music app, which I think is really, really smart.
Yep.
So the only downside to that, and it's really, I guess there's downsides to both the musician and the audience here, but that means that you're probably not going to have access to the chat functionality. So being able to chat with other people who are watching, but any of these like really, really big events, there's so many people talking that you can't even keep up with the text chat anyway. But it also means that you're not going to have access to like tipping functionality where you can send money to the people you're watching on Twitch. But overall, I think this is a brilliant idea.
It is. Do you know if they're going to have any sort of link in the Amazon Music experience that you could jump to Twitch if you have Twitch installed? Because that would seem like that might solve the problem for people who do want to tip or whatever.
I would think they would do that, but I don't know for sure. And I just saw this story right before we went live tonight. So I haven't been able to give this a try or anything. But if it's not there initially, I have to imagine they'll add it pretty quickly because it just makes sense to have it there. For those who do actually want the full Twitch experience, it makes sense to make that easy to do.
Right. That's cool.
Yeah. Okay. So speaking of cool, like probably the coolest news that I think we're going to talk about tonight is in the gaming story, the gaming section. And I think if Richard did go and watch the video that I told him to watch beforehand, he might think that this is as cool as I do. So today, NVIDIA, the number one manufacturer of gaming class video cards, had a big, huge event announcing their newest generation of video cards. So it's now the 3000 series card. So if you're used to like the RTX 2080 and the 2080 Ti being the top dogs in the video card space, no longer is that the case because now we're in the 3000 series with the Ampere. I keep forgetting how they pronounce this. Ampere.
I'm assuming it's Ampere.
Ampere. Yes, that sounds right. Brand new technology. It's not the old Turing chipset, which was just released. It's only 2 years old, so it's not really actually that old. But these new cards, it's basically new architecture, 7-nanometer chips. So you've got smaller and smaller transistors and all that stuff, which allows them all to work faster and cram more of them on the same die and all that sort of stuff. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy what they're doing with these things. So ray tracing was the big technology in the 2000 series cards. They've taken it to a whole new level in the 3000 series cards. And the video that I'll of course have a link to in the show notes is absolutely mind-blowing. It is a video that is rendered live. This is not pre-rendered footage. This is supposedly live rendering, basically like you were playing a game, but it's like a cool marble going through a crazy Rube Goldberg machine type thing with like it's set up in the corner of a room and the sun is setting out the window next to it and there's all these different lights over top of it. And the graphics on this, like, I don't think I've ever seen video that actually looked like reality. Like, you have to look real close to be able to go, oh yeah, that's obviously CG or a video game or whatever. Like, it just looks like someone took a really great camera and recorded real marbles rolling down one of these crazy machines. That's how good this looks. Did you get to watch the video?
I watched like the first minute or two of it and I didn't have any sound. So I don't know if I missed like the amazing part or not, but I was like, okay, so I get it. The marbles, they're rendered. Okay. I don't know.
But it looked real, didn't it? Did you not think that it looked real?
I need to see it on a bigger screen, I think, to be able to appreciate it. Because I was like, okay, it's a demo. That's great.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's absolutely a demo. And it's not like it's that cool of a demo. It's not.
I mean, it's not like we haven't seen marble demos before either. It's just.
Right.
I don't know. I need to watch it again for sure.
I was absolutely floored by it. So they are announcing the top three tiers of the new cards. There's going to be the 3070, the 3080, and then of course the top dog is the 3090. Now, all of this technology comes at a cost. The low end one, I mean, it's hard to call it low end. It's still an amazing video card. The 3070, $500. That is the base model card, basically. Mm-hmm. And it's the just a video card, the same cost as what we're expecting the next generation game consoles to cost, mm-hmm. for just the video card. The step up from that, the 3080, $700. Okay, that's a crap ton of money, but it's a little bit more in line with what we've seen from the previous couple generations. The top model, the 3090, which has 24 gigs of RAM on board and is capable, they say, of rendering 8K video at 60 frames per second. It's going to require a 1,000-watt power supply to do all of this. An eye-watering $1,500 for that video card.
Yeah, that's just bonkers.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I have a hard time understanding how this industry, and largely because it's only them anymore, but for the most part, there are some other players, just not as big, how this industry continues to get away with not lowering prices as technology improves, but increasing them. Wasn't the last big shocker price tag $1,200?
I think so. Yeah.
This is
for the 2080
phones,
right?
Which just get more and more unreasonably expensive every year.
Yes, it absolutely is. And the other thing that baffles me is you're not likely to see massive discounts on the 2000 series cards now. Like, that doesn't happen either. Like,
right.
Give me a break somewhere. But they keep selling. They keep selling. And people are getting their money worth. I mean, all of that is in the eye of the beholder, I suppose. But, you know, the Xbox Series X and the PlayStation 5, they're going to look great. And compared to what PCs do right now, they'll be neck and neck. But these new cards from NVIDIA come out September 17th. And at that point, they are making a giant leap past the Xbox Series X and the PlayStation 5.
Hmm.
But you're paying for it. You are paying major for it.
Right.
So it looks amazing. Absolutely amazing. But it's not something that I'm going to be ponying up the money for. So no. There you go. New NVIDIA cards, September 17th. If you want to drop $1,500 on a video card, can you invite me over? But I mean, it's pandemic, so like, invite me over and then you'll have to leave for a couple of hours while I play on your computer. But
I'll bring my own controller.
Right.
So I don't have to touch yours.
No, Richard, you can't talk about using a controller with these are PC gamers. It's keyboard and mouse. Yeah. You got to know these things if you're going to get invited to the cool kids party. All right. So just a couple of real quick ones on the Xbox side. So I think we mentioned a couple of weeks ago that Microsoft had shipped out some game controllers that had Xbox Series X and Series S branding on the side of the box, despite the fact that the Series S has never actually been announced. Well, they've done it again. A user over on Twitter posted some pictures of a controller that he bought. And this time it wasn't the controller or the box. It was the card that came with the controller that was the free 15-day trial to Xbox Game Pass Ultimate. Said that it supports Xbox Series X and Series S. Supports something that doesn't technically exist or has even been announced yet.
Is that like the TiVo supporting the streaming app? No, never mind.
Well, so as we keep seeing this happening, this tells me that Microsoft planned to announce this thing by now. For them to put all of this branding and stuff on all of this packaging and stuff, like all of that takes coordination. It mm-hmm. takes lining all of that up at least weeks ahead of time, if not months ahead of time. So they must have said months ago, yeah, we can release this stuff in September or August because we will have announced it all by then. And they still haven't, which does make me... I know that Richard is like, Josh is going all QAnon on the next-gen game console stuff here. But it does make me wonder, maybe they are actually considering not releasing these things this year, like I talked about last week.
Yeah, I don't think it's that. I am more inclined to believe that the S is maybe the S gets pushed off, but not the X. And I'm also inclined to think that maybe it's just gotten that bad in Microsoft marketing. Maybe that group that's been so bad at this for years has just gone off the deep end.
So I think the other very realistic possibility here, the other realistic explanation to this could just be that, yes, they were absolutely planning to announce the S by now, but that their plan was to announce the S when they announced the pricing of both consoles,
mm-hmm.
and for that to be after the Sony event, so that they can say, you know, maybe the Series X cost the same as the PlayStation 5, but the Series S, that costs $200 less than the PlayStation 5 or something like that.
Yeah.
That would make sense.
That would make sense. Yeah, I'll give you that.
Since they're still waiting for Sony to go first, we just keep missing those dates. So I don't know. So one possible date where we might find out is the Tokyo Game Show, TGS. It is the last major game conference of the year. Every year, it's always in September. It's virtual again, like all of the rest of these major conferences. Microsoft is opening up the event, basically. They've got a one-hour event planned for the start of TGS on Thursday, September 24th. And that's weird because Microsoft, like the Xbox, does not do well in Japan. Like people in Japan, they don't buy Xboxes. They buy PlayStations and Nintendos. So it's a little bit weird for them to be sort of keynote. Like it's kind of like a keynote, right? They're the opening act here for this event. Now, Microsoft has been working really hard to try and make inroads into the Japanese community. Been bringing boatloads of Japanese games to the Xbox. And I'm sure that Phil Spencer is spending tons of time in Japan trying to make better relationships with Japanese game studios and to try and figure out a way to make this console actually sell in Japan. But I think that if we're thinking maybe this is the event where they'll announce the pricing and all that stuff, that this just seems, it is absolutely the least likely place for Microsoft to do that, because why would they do that at the place where they sell the fewest number of consoles? It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Well, maybe because it's the only event left, but why would they have waited for that?
Right, when they can just have their own event.
Right.
So that's it for our gaming news, Josh's gaming QAnon segment on the next-gen game consoles. And that's it for our news. Before we get into what's going on in our entertainment centers, I would like to ask you, some of you do this already, and we really, really appreciate it. But for those of you who haven't yet, maybe if you like the show, if you've made it this far into this podcast, even past my conspiracy theory rants, then you probably actually like the show a lot. And so we think that maybe you've got some friends who might like it too. So if you could just share the show with some of your friends. You know, you don't have to necessarily go out and leave us ratings and reviews and all that stuff. Just share it, retweet it, maybe post a tweet, maybe a screenshot of you and your favorite podcasting app listening to it. Share the show with some friends. We'd really, really appreciate it. So now let's get into the most fun segment oftentimes, Richard, what is going on in your entertainment center?
I mentioned last week that I was watching all of the national conventions. And so last week was the Republican National Convention finishing up. I still stand by what I said. I think I was impressed by what the Democratic National Committee pulled off, given what they had to do and not knowing what this was going to look like. But wow, I mean, the Republican National Committee presumably led with a lot of influence from Trump's own folks, and as I understand it, actually produced by the guy who produced The Apprentice.
Oh, wow.
Really brought it. I mean, yeah. they just, the production value of what they had to pull off for a largely remote event was phenomenal. I'm going to try not to get political, but I do want to mention that the last night featured a live event of somewhere between 1,000 and 2,000 people crammed in on the White House lawn. And that was just entirely disheartening to me.
Yeah, that was strange.
So other than that, I was also watching a little more of Man in the High Castle Season 2, Doctor Who Season 2. I am up to date on Big Brother. I've also been kind of keeping up with the new Star Trek comedy cartoon thing, Lower Decks.
And I still can't get used to that. Like, a Star Trek comedy cartoon? What?
I know. And it's funny because our friend of the show, John, has been watching this as well. And we've been kind of comparing notes periodically. And he's been saying, oh, I'm going to watch this episode now. Have you seen this yet? And so just last night, I was trying to watch that episode. It's really good. It's really good. I mean, it's crazy, but it's good. I'm thoroughly enjoying it.
And that's on CBS All Access,
and that's
right?
On CBS All Access, yeah. And then finally, I watched a movie that I didn't expect to enjoy anywhere near as much as I did.
What?
I watched Marvel's Venom, and this movie did not do as well as they projected it would do in theaters.
And no, wasn't this like the worst performing Marvel movie in like the last 15 years or something?
Oh, I'm sure. And I don't think the reviews were very good to it. I thoroughly enjoyed this movie.
Well, here comes our show feedback for next week.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. But I would be completely happy with a follow-up that included this character. This was not what I expected at all. I know nothing about these characters in the comic world. Nothing. I was not a Spider-Man guy. I was a Batman and Superman guy. And so learning about these characters only through these movies and then expecting this to be a very different film than it was just made it far more enjoyable for me than I expected. Maybe if I were a diehard fan, I wouldn't have liked it as much. I don't know.
Maybe. GP3 in the chat says that everyone that he knows that saw it said the same thing. They enjoyed it. So maybe this is one of those cases where the critics or the diehard fans just were a little too hard on it.
Yeah, I don't know. But that's it. That's all I've been watching. So how about
you? That's really not much. But I guess when you have four nights of political conventions and eight nights in the previous 2 weeks, like that's a lot of nights of content.
So. It was 18 hours total, not including commentary. Yes.
Wow.
It's a lot of stuff.
That is a lot. Jeez. Okay. Well, for me, also not a ton. Last week, I said that I had started one of these more leadership-y style books, self-improvement kind of things called Start With Why by Simon Sinek. I gave up over the weekend. I was ruthless on the content that I had been listening to. It was like Saturday was like bloody Monday for stuff I was listening to. I was like, nope, I'm done with this book. Nope, I'm not listening to this podcast or this podcast or this podcast. Like, you're all out. I'm moving on. So passed through all of that stuff and got to start listening to the next book that Jen wanted me to start listening to. It's part of that Throne of Glass series, but it's kind of a side book it's novellas. It's like smaller backstories of the main character. It's called The Assassin's Blade. I think I'm on the fourth novella in it so far. A couple of them have been pretty good. A couple of them have just been meh. But overall, pretty decent, I think. Cool. And I'm probably halfway through that. In the gaming side, not a ton there. A little bit of NHL, a little bit of Call of Duty. And then the other thing, this isn't exactly my entertainment center, but it is an area where I do consume a lot of media, especially podcasts and audiobooks.
Sure.
My car. And it sounds like I'm probably doing more driving than Richard has been doing during this pandemic. And maybe that's just because I have kids to shuttle to places and stuff. But my car stereo this weekend, just like the Bluetooth is just like, nope, I don't care about you anymore. I'm not doing what you want me to do. It'll work for phone calls, which is important, but it will not play music through my phone via Bluetooth anymore. And I've removed and re-added in every possible way my phone to the stereo. Can't make it work. Thought, well, maybe it's my phone. Like, maybe I need to like hard reset my phone. Now, before I went through that insanity, I thought maybe I should try another device first. So I went and tried my tablet. That didn't work either. So I looked through the manual. It doesn't look like there's a way to hard reset a car stereo. So it might just be screwed here. I don't know. It does have an aux jack.
Has this happened on multiple occasions, or is it just one outing where this occurred?
It's been multiple occasions.
Okay. Because it's my understanding that most of these car systems, like overnight, for all intents and purposes, your entertainment system is rebooted, or, you know, kind of like the best that you can do as a restart, short of it crashing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, hey, you could have had a Chrysler product and like my Jeep, it could have just crashed all the time on you.
I don't want to get into my feelings towards particular automobile manufacturers either, so we'll stay away from that one. But
maybe time to just get comfortable with those cables again.
Well, but my Pixel doesn't have a headphone jack. So
yeah, but wait. It doesn't even have an adapter that can use the USB-C thing to a headphone?
Oh, I guess it does have that. So I could do that, but that doesn't give me the ability to do, like, I think for phone calls that might be complicated, right?
Well, your phone would still be connected by Bluetooth for phone calls, I believe.
I don't know about that. So I'm looking at some other options. Maybe just disconnecting the battery from my car for an hour or something might cause a full reset.
In my basement, I am sure I have one of those things that's an auxiliary cable that connects to a cassette tape adapter.
You know, you joke about those, but that was the best way to get to get your phone and stuff, or your MP3 player, your Zune, your iPod connected to your car stereo for a long time.
It totally was.
It was way better than those FM transmitters.
Oh, those were awful.
Those are so bad. So bad. Yeah. So I am looking at other Bluetooth things that those then connect through the aux jack, because I don't really want to have to replace the whole car stereo.
Right.
This is a 10-year-old car at this point. I don't want to put a crap ton of money into that. I can get Wire Cutter's recommended Bluetooth thingy for like $35.
Right.
So that probably makes more sense. Having a full Android Auto, you know, stereo would be cool, but that's like $400 or $500. And all it does is gives me a bigger screen for Android Auto. Like, I already use Android Auto on my phone, so I don't really need an Android Auto head unit. Like, yeah. It's fine. So we'll see what I end up doing over the next week or two, because I have to be able to listen to my stuff in the car. This is going to kill me. So, all right. So that's it for what's going on in my entertainment center and in my driveway, my garage.
Sure. I don't know.
And that's going to do it for the show. So if you want to get a hold of us or check out some of the other things we're working on, you can follow us on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. And we are on Twitter and Instagram at Digi Media Zone. We're on Facebook and all that other stuff too. Go check out the show notes for all of those links, including our email address, especially if you're new to email like Richard. And while you're over there at the DMZ, you can check out our other show. Richard just released a brand new episode of Home On, his other podcast, where he primarily focuses on DIY smart home stuff. Richard, what's going on with the latest episode of Home On?
Yeah, so our friend Adam Justice, who's the CEO of ConnectSense, he joined me to just kind of run through some of the latest news and do some updates on projects that we had done in our homes, even since the most recent episodes of the Smart Home Show, where we each dedicated an episode to what was going on in our homes. So we've been pretty active in that area. And then coming up, I've already recorded with Lyndon Tibbetts, the CEO of IFTTT. We had a great discussion, and I'm looking forward to getting that out earlier in the month of September.
Nice. All right, and then we record this show live. We also use Twitch to do that, but you can just head over to the DMZ and click the live button to access that, or follow us on Twitch and you'll get notified there. Follow us on Twitter to also get notified when we plan to do these live recordings. It's normally Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, but it shifts around from time to time. Almost always my fault. So follow us on Twitter to find out for sure when that's going to happen. That's going to do it for episode 532. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.